Hello, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's Friday, the 17th of April, 2009. I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. Tonight on Truth News Radio, 9/11 and disinformation and misinformation dominate the news. We're going to be covering a number of stories that centre on efforts to disrupt and derail investigations into 9/11. We're going to be looking at disinformation in the form of films, one particular film that has recently come out, which appears to be a quite sophisticated attempt to discredit the 9/11 truth movement. We're also going to be talking about Wikipedia and the incredible Wikipedia crackdown, which has led to important 9/11 truth articles being edited, censored, and people with people who join Wikipedia attempting to edit 9/11 truth articles are being banned, and their comments are being completely deleted from Wikipedia. This is a really, really important development, and you know, shows that the truth movement is really having an effect, and that what we're seeing is basically unabashed, you know, censorship, just straight out, you know, closing of the communication channels. And this all, of course, comes on the heels of the really important breakthrough article by the international team on thermitic material discovered in the World Trade Center dust. And we'll just be recapping on that, and we'll give you a clip from the interview on Danish television from Niels Harrit, which I think has actually provoked a lot of a lot more attention from those who wish to silence us. And I don't think it's a total coincidence that we're seeing this disinformation film coming out, and we're seeing Wikipedia doing very bizarre forms of censorship. So we'll be joined tonight by our esteemed guest, John Bursell. And I'd just like to welcome John to the show. And John, are you there?
As always, a pleasure to be here, Herewood.
Well, as always, it's a great pleasure to have you aboard the ship of truth. You know, look, John, you've been looking into this new film that's been released, and you know, I just want to emphasize, we don't want to promote this thing, okay? We look into stuff. We often talk about disinformation on this show because we think disinformation is important. It's important to be studied in the same way like psychiatrists want to study serial killers, right? Not because they're interesting in themselves, but because we have to understand it. Would you kind of agree with that analogy?
I would, and as you were saying in the introduction, I think the gloves are off now. So we've reached a new level with the propaganda and with the slander and the use of dupes, patsies, moles, you know, all these other types of people, you know, paid actors, etc., are really starting to become quite obvious to the people that are looking for disinformation.
Yeah.
And that's what we're about. We're trying to expose the people that are bringing forth this bad information and prevent people that maybe don't have the technical knowledge or understanding to see through it from falling for their traps.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we continue with this effort and, you know, we don't slack off and end up sort of accommodating, because I think what we're doing is vital. It's really because we're actually in this information war. I mean, that's the way I see it. I keep trying to frame it that way so that people understand that when you're in an information war, it's information that really counts. So, you know, if you have bad information, then you are losing in that struggle. And this tendency of bad information to creep in is, you know, there's two factors at work. I mean, there's the inevitable human nature aspect of it, well, where people can get carried away with, you know, slightly crackpot ideas. And anyone is capable of falling into that. You know, and you know that can be genuine, and I'm not. I'm certainly wouldn't want to point the finger at anyone to say, well, you know, you are working for, you know, Intel or, you know, COINTEL or any of that kind of talk. except in cases where we see individuals that have demonstrated over time that they are, for one, you can see, well, they're educated and intelligent enough to know better, and they continually go down a direction and seem to accumulate more and more really, really problematic stuff. And of course, James Fetzer is the one that springs to mind there.
There's at least three people that I'd be prepared, even though it's sort of against what we're about to name names. But now that time's moved on, there's three people that clearly I think can be brought to account and called operatives of the government or operatives of the enemy or whoever it might be, which is, Morgan Reynolds, who's quite
Indeed.
Obvious. And then you have Jim Fetzer and also John Lear. I think they're probably the three that I'd be prepared to stake my reputation on and say that they're actively working for the other side. The rest of the people, it's always hard to tell. But like you said, now that if we have a clear history of these people, their background obviously gives us some clues. Like with John Lear, say, for instance, one of the major no-plane at the World Trade Center advocates, ex-CIA. Then we have people like Morgan Reynolds, who's obviously ex-government and came into the 9/11 truth cause with all guns blazing, quite strong and quite unexpectedly from his background, but then quickly moved on to be involved in discrediting theories like the directed energy weapons taking down the towers, which nearly all the scientists have moved away from now. They've actually all, that was the reason that that scholars for 9/11 truth broke up. Basically around that theory and the fact that they were putting forward hypotheses without any evidence. And we continually get back to the scientific method on this program, saying that, we won't accept talk about hypotheses if they're not based in evidence. And there's nothing wrong with having that hard line. And that's really what we've done to find out during this process that people like Morgan Reynolds and Jim Fetzer that support the directed energy weapons will support theories and be outspoken and chastise and attack other people that believe other theories that are based in evidence, based on their feelings, which is completely ridiculous. And you could only make an argument if they were trying to achieve justice for the victims of 9/11 that, they'd have to be insane to carry on that way, or they have to be paid agents.
Indeed. And I think, there's also the case where people can have genuine breakdowns. And there's been an article which was posted on 911 Blogger. It's also on 911oz.com. I posted an excerpt from it about David Shaler, the ex-MI5 agent, who appears to have had an emotional breakdown. I mean, his partner has said that she has no understanding of what happened to him. He started out doing some what seemed important, whistleblowing. He was persecuted a bit by the government in the UK. He was in prison for a while. He got out of prison. They joined, he and his partner, who had both quit from MI5, Annie Michon and David Shaler, had joined the 9/11 truth movement in 2005. And they, quickly became quite prominent in the UK. It was really just the beginning of that truth movement there, and they were pretty important in that. And then, of course, David Shaler started to drift into these other ideas himself. He started to drift into ideas that there were no planes at all that hit the towers. And then he just lost the plot completely, ended up claiming to be the Messiah in a really bizarre set of YouTube videos. And recently I've seen one where he talks about joining forces with David Icke. I don't know if you've seen that one, John, but I don't know whether David Icke even knows or cares about that, but it's just an interesting twist that he's now saying that. I don't know whether the man is deliberately stirring up trouble or has just really lost the plot.
To me, I look at David Shaler, and I'm glad that he descended rapidly into this state of insanity or whatever it is that he's in.
Because it's good that it happened quickly.
It was quite obvious that he was crazy, which was great. But we get people like Jim Fetzer, Morgan Reynolds, Nico Haupt, all these other people that continue to fight this no-plane argument now, even though they've been successfully debunked and there's been a lot of energy spent on that campaign. They continue to keep putting it forward and trying to look for new angles. you know, any little angle that they can get, they'll focus, you know, 15, 20 minutes in a documentary on, to cause people to lose confidence in what they believe. And obviously, the state we're at now with 9/11 truth is that we're at the point now where we're actually creating a new paradigm. We can actually explain the events in a way that can make sense to someone in a holistic approach to the issue, which took a long time to get there. Now, if you start to cause division in the way people see things and you start to question, you know, the scientific integrity of people within the movement that have done the work that's got us to the stage we've got to, then that's a very effective weapon to divide us as a group and also to cause people to lose confidence in what they know. And the no-plan argument's a very useful tool for the enemy to cause division and cause distraction within us, you know, because, you know, there's some things that we know and there's some things that we don't. But we know that planes flew into the towers. Now, if we don't know that, then that really causes a lot of people to lose confidence. Does that make sense?
It does. And, it's a theme that we return to again and again on this show. And, you know, at the risk of getting monotonous, but I mean, you know, we've done the big discussion on the Tale of Two Truth movements. We've had the group discussion on that, but we still haven't really. There is no real consensus other than the consensus that a small group who run sites like 911truth.org, 911 blogger, you know, our site 911 Oz, a few news sites, you know, I hesitate to include InfoWars on there because InfoWars sometimes veers into a little bit more sensationalized stuff, but you know, they're certainly better than, you know, they're not Fox News, you know, they don't have that sort of disinformation. They have a lot of good information. I find it hard to unreservedly endorse InfoWars though.
Similar to Rents or some of the other programs.
Yeah, well, Rents then veers right into territory that I consider to be disinformation. I feel that Rents, with, you know, you look at their site, you look at all of the things they promote, it starts to get into very murky waters with Illuminati theories and UFO stuff.
It does, but there's a lot of fans out there, so
yeah.
You know, we're not saying don't go there, but just be careful,
yeah.
You know?
I mean, we're representing a particular, you know, theme here. We're trying to focus, and I mean, actually, I might just read for you an interesting article that popped up in Wired magazine. Now, this article was actually written in March. And it's really a total hit piece against the Alex Jones InfoWars sort of anti-New World Order movement. And it's actually in the guise of a review of a film. Now, I haven't actually seen the film, but I'll just pause for a minute so I can get the data up here and we'll just carry on. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, we are back here live by podcast on Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm just about to just read to you from a review from Wired magazine. Now, this was published on March 14, and it is about a film which was actually made in Austin, Texas. And I'm not exactly sure of the film itself, whether it's actually trying to promote or whether it's actually critical of Alex Jones and the New World Order theme. The review of the article is certainly very, very condescending, and it just has some interesting twists of language and, I would say, crafted psychological propaganda in it. Now, the title of the article is New World Order Illuminates Conspiracy Theorists. And just try and count, as I'm reading it to you, try and count how many times the phrase conspiracy theory or conspiracy theorists is used. It's quite staggering because it's a short article. You've probably heard the conspiracy theories. The Bilderberg Group secretly runs the world. 9/11 was an inside job. A group of elites is working to establish a new world order. The documentary New World Order, which had its world premiere Friday at the South by Southwest Film Festival, offers an inside look at the people who dedicate their lives to investigating and spreading the word about such conspiracy theories. The 83-minute movie by directors Luke Meyer and Andrew Neil, who worked together on 2006's Darkon, focuses chiefly on Alex Jones, a documentary filmmaker and talk radio host with a loud voice, an urgent message, and many times a bullhorn in hand. Jones, whose movies include such dire polemics as Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, and Dark Secrets Inside Bohemian Grove, certainly seems sincere enough as he tries to shine a light on the annual Bilderberg meeting, where world leaders meet in secret to talk about something. As New World Order follows Jones and some of his fellow conspiracy mongers, it delivers a fascinating look at true believers who are desperate to expose the supposed sins of politicians and business chieftains. Without delving deeply into the conspiracy theories themselves, the movie introduces the real people whose lives are in some instances consumed by these exotic ideas. The grim scenarios outlined by the conspiracy theorists are familiar to anyone with a yen for exploring the information rat holes so prevalent on the internet. One of Jones' cohorts calls the web the conspiracy theorist's best friend, the cheapest and easiest way to disseminate information that's ever existed. Jones has turned his InfoWars concept into a cottage industry. But the truly telling part of New World Order is its revealing depiction of the individuals who spend their spare time establishing alternative communities or burning DVDs to hand out at the World Trade Center site. Alternately amusing and poignant, New World Order peels back a layer of mystery to show the conspiracy theorists' strange world. Meyer and Neil set out to make an even-handed documentary that lets Jones and his people speak for themselves, and they've succeeded. It's an interesting and compelling portrait of a thriving subculture. Well, John, what's your review of the review?
Well, it's funny, when you read it, it didn't seem quite as bad as when I read it.
I think I made it sound better.
It's just the overall context. When you actually look at what's actually said, obviously we see this quite often in disinformation. Well, I don't know if that's disinformation, but it's definitely heading in that direction. But straight away, it pronounces the bleeding obvious. You've probably heard of the conspiracy theories, and it says exactly what we know to be true. The Bilderberg Group don't secretly run the world, but they have an effect on the way the world operates, and that's quite obvious because we know that. Politicians go there if they want to be elected. People go there if they've got issues, and we know that some of the things that have been leaked out to what they've talked about, we've seen come true. So we definitely know they do have power in the world. There's no doubt about that. But they're sort of throwing a bit more weight on that than we probably would if we were doing it from a very realistic point of view. 9/11 was an inside job. Well, it is, and we know that. And a group of elites is working to establish a new world order, which they are, and it's happening today. So
well, it certainly is
I mean,
now.
But it sounds like it's saying that we're crazy the whole way through this article, but it's actually saying quite a lot of truth along the way, isn't it?
That's why I think it's actually quite a clever article, because if you, like as you said, when I read it, it didn't sound like it was being particularly hostile. But if you actually read it and read, I think, just the words, and bear in mind that most people who read this, I mean, Wired magazine is a very popular magazine with people in the IT world, in the digital world, in the web industries and entertainment, animation, just that whole high-tech world, right? It's a very popular mainstream mag of that world. Now, those people reading this, what will happen is because 99% of them shut out information that would make them question the fundamental basics of their world. You know, people who can afford to buy Wired magazine generally have reasonably good jobs to start off with. People who read Wired online are generally the same people. They're generally people in reasonably well-paid jobs. And when they read this, what this will do is confirm for them what they subconsciously already knew, is that, oh, yeah, the repetition of that word. Now, I counted exactly how many times it's used. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 uses of that phrase, conspiracy theorist. Sometimes it's conspiracy monger. And that is joined with statements like conspiracy theorist's strange world, i.e., the world in which the conspiracy theorist lives is not like you and me. You know, you and me, we're normal people, but the conspiracy theorists live in this strange world, okay? People who dedicate their lives to investigating and spreading the word about such conspiracy theories. Again, this is separating them from you and me. It's like saying, it's almost like talking about Jehovah's Witnesses, yeah, or Scientology.
They've been trying to do is they've been trying to create this idea that we're religious or we have a belief that, you know, is based on our feelings.
Exactly.
But not based on facts.
Now, where they really show their cards in this article is the phrase, the information rat holes so prevalent on the internet. Now you've really got to break that down and analyze that, you know, use semiotic analysis. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, John, but, you know, linguistic psychological analysis of the use of words can tell you a lot. The use of the word rat there is quite extreme and extraordinary. It's very, very rare, and I've never even heard that phrase used before. That'd be the first time I've ever heard rat hole being used.
Rabbit hole would be the normal expression for what they're trying to get across, but they've used rat hole to discredit us further, obviously.
And that's got to be deliberate, hasn't it? I mean, that's not just normal language. That's
it's aggressive.
It's someone sat down and thought, what's the nastiest word we can put in there? But you know, there's nothing there that you could probably get a libel suit, you know, or a defamation suit. So I think it's clever because it stops short of that. It stops short of defamation, but it comes about as close as you can get. I mean, it comes really close. And, you know, its job is to, yeah, really just keep people's eyes closed. You know, don't look here, you know, move on. You know, and the last statement there, alternately amusing and poignant. Again, this is another clever one. We can laugh at them, okay? They're funny, you know.
Yeah.
They're a joke. Okay, they're clowns.
So we're the rats. We're the evildoers. We're the perpetrators. We're the you know, the corrupt, and also we're quite amusing.
Yes.
So that's interesting.
Well, it is interesting because I mean the people I know and the people I met, just you know that specifically are the ones that are involved in the 9/11 movement, are not like that at all. And I would say that there are others. Who might you could characterize as being a bit peculiar that sometimes come into the 9/11 movement, but the ones that are the most, focused
steadfast
are not like that. You know, they tend to be people who've had long careers in science, in you know, jobs with responsibility. I mean, they're classic whistleblower types, you know. And whistleblowers, it's been shown that whistleblowers generally are people who've got a higher level of responsibility than the average person. I mean, hasn't it? It comes up a lot. You know, and you know, when whistleblowers come along, there is always the organizations that they blow the whistle on always try to discredit them, always try to make out that this person has some problem, you know, some psychological problem, some emotional problem. It's an old game. And you know we're in this game, and you know I'm calling the bluff, you know, and I hope that people who are listening to this show, you know, just get some benefit from this discussion, so that when these issues come up, when you're talking about what you think to an independent third party person that you've just met, you can understand that this is a bigger picture, you know. And a lot of people that you'll meet will have these ideas in their heads. They'll use that conspiracy theory phrase. It'll pop up. Okay. So.
Oh, it does. I mean, I had an interesting conversation at work last night with a group of about six people. I was working overtime. It was about 3 a.m. at our break. And, I got challenged by a fellow that's, quite an intelligent man. And but I was surprised. The group was quite supportive of me, and in the end, he sort of left. He just got the shit and took off because I just had too much information, and he just didn't know enough, you know. And that's the thing. You have to be prepared to. And I did. I took his aggressive stance about 9/11, and then I just started sort of seeing what he knew about it, and it was soon obvious to him that he didn't know much about it at all. And once that becomes obvious, they either will become more interested or they'll walk away. So, you know, maybe that's a way to deal with it. I'm not sure. Could we talk about continuous pieces, 9/11?
Yeah, this is the film you've been watching today. And
Very difficult to watch, but I have completed it now. So.
And the title is Continuous Pieces?
Spelt incorrectly.
Okay, really?
I'm not sure why that
really
is.
That's just another little, another sign to say to people that this is rubbish. It's like a subconscious one. It's amazing.
Possibly, but it's obviously done on purpose.
Yeah.
This video is the latest in video argument for the no planes at the World Trade Center. It obviously argues some other things as well. It includes the regular people that we see involved, like John Lear and Jim Fetzer, who scoffs, scorns, and attacks us. And he made me quite angry. He's actually really hateful of 9/11 Truth Movement mainline now.
Okay.
And he's outspoken in that regard in this film. I think it's just segments from his radio show. There's also Morgan Reynolds, Nico Hopt, the fellow that likes to bite people's, noses down at, Ground Zero and things when they're out there trying to hand out information. So he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Maybe insane, who knows? Just the usual sort of thing. But the way it was crafted, I was very impressed with. They've just concentrated on a few ideas, and what they've done is this fellow that's, I don't know if it's a web fairy or who it is, but I've heard the voice before. He's in all the No Plane films. He's got quite a shaky, guarded sort of sound to his voice. And
oh, is this the web fairy?
He's just, what's that?
Is this the web fairy?
Okay, I'm not really sure if it's the web fairy, but I've just heard that voice, and the web fairies are one of the main protagonists of the No Plane at the World Trade Center argument. But anyway, this fellow goes on to interview all sorts of people. It might be the secretary at Boeing of some engineering wing that he's rung up, and he asked her a question about the airspeed of the aircraft, or is it possible it could go this fast? He'll ask anyone anything to get his message across, but most of the time he fails. Like, he doesn't get the answers he wants. What he's doing is answering questions that he can get an answer to that sort of build the case without actually asking the question. Can a 767 make 500, 530, 560 miles an hour in a shallow dive at, approximately sea level? And the answer is, from my experience and my knowledge, yes. Now, it obviously can't make that speed if it's in level flight with the engine thrust. The aircraft's not able to make that speed at sea level with just thrust. But in a dive using gravity, it's been well established that it can. And the fuselage, which he sort of negates around this issue quite successfully, if you're a layperson, he starts to build this case that the idea the aircraft might break up. Now, he does that by asking people that appear to be maybe paid actors or possibly people that don't fully understand the structure of the aircraft. But the simple fact is the aircraft is rated to 0.86 of max speed. Now, max speed varies depending on the attitude. The denser the substance that moves through, the sound the speed of sound increases. It becomes more rapid the denser the amount of material is. So at a lower attitude, obviously, max speed is much faster than it is in a higher altitude. But anyway, at the end of the day, we know that the plane can do 660 miles per hour, not knots, because that's a slight variation of miles per hour. It's actually less for more, but that's another explanation I won't go into. But using miles per hour, which is what they use, the aircraft is capable of handling 660 miles per hour before there will be structural damage to the aircraft. Now, that's just a limit. That's not to say the aircraft could go much faster. It's like anything in engineering. They give a limit, but they always expect that that might be bypassed. So they always build in a little bit of a factor of, you know, over-engineering. So the aircraft could probably handle much more than that. I'm not really sure how much more, but considerably more than that. Obviously, if it gets to the speed of sound, that's when you have catastrophic failure within an airframe because of all the vibrations and different things that build up. Now, he tries to make an argument that the engines just couldn't handle going that fast and that they would cause drag. Now, that's true. If the aircraft's in a dive, the engines can't really go that fast at sea level, but the gravitational effect of the dive is pushing those engines through that air. Now, whether or not they're acting as drag on the aircraft, well, that's hard to say. But if that's true, it still doesn't matter. The aircraft still can make that speed in a shallow dive. So he creates all these straw man arguments and then uses, you know, all sorts of ways of attacking us in the meantime, flashing pictures of the plane going in and flashing pictures of the building being constructed and flashing pictures of documents and bits and pieces. And then he'll get someone like Fetzer will come in and laugh at us how implausible it is that the plane could possibly go that fast and, you know, that, all that sort of stuff. And anyway, just carries on. Then he moves on to the next argument, which is that it doesn't decelerate. The plane doesn't decelerate.
This is the one that I've seen many times used.
Okay, now they've got rid of some of their arguments about the hull, the cutout shape of the hull.
Yep.
They've dropped that argument now because it's been so clearly debunked that most people aren't interested in that. So they're just trying now to stick to the arguments they think have still got weight, which is the airspeed, which we've just gone through briefly,
okay,
and then the deceleration of the aircraft. Now, he rings up all these engineers and asks them a question about, well, doesn't that video look strange? You know, and he keeps using this idea. Yeah, of course, it looks strange to see a plane fly into the World Trade Center. That's strange, and it doesn't look normal to me. You don't see planes do that, do you?
Yeah.
And he keeps trying to work on that with different witnesses. But wasn't it strange or abnormal or whatever it might be? But that still doesn't negate the fact that it happened and that it can be made sense of scientifically, which has happened. It's been made sense of scientifically in the Journal of 9/11 Studies and by people like Jim Hoffman. And the calculations have been done, and the plane does decelerate. It decelerates 12% in its time moving through the building. And it completely decelerates by the time the explosion's finished because no plane comes out the other side. You know, so,
but it sounds like they're talking, you know, nonsense, but they're sort of trading on the fact that they've got some kind of status or, you know, they've got some qualifications. So they're trying to make you, you know, they're trying to make something credible, which if anyone else said it normally, you know, they'd be laughed at.
That's it. I mean, and they keep coming back to the idea, in the end, they come back to the idea of holograms. Now, they take a long time. This is like a 2-hour and 20-minute film, and it's like sort of, it would probably put most people to sleep. But thing is that it's really, to me, it's very psychological in nature because it's really trying to build this case in people's heads that you know, we're gatekeepers. You know, so it's using the arguments that we use, and this is one of the other things that continues through the film, is they used the same words that we use to attack the enemy and to talk about scientists that won't look at the evidence, blah, blah, blah. They use that exactly against us now, the people within the 9/11 truth community.
Right.
And the whole film is about discrediting us with people that, you know, have got caught up in this no planes thing. So it's really just a divide and conquer thing. And I think they're just really trying to fracture that fringe element that believe that no planes hit the tower, which is only a small amount. It might be, you know, 5% or something of us. But they really just want to now convince those people that we're idiots and we need to leave. And then I think they're also presenting this case so that further down the track, as it's been used against me previously, that they can say that, you know, the 9/11 truth movement believed there was no planes at the World Trade Center. So it seems to be two-pronged. They want to fracture off and cause dissent within the 9/11 truth group with the people that might believe their arguments, which I think are quite plausible for someone that doesn't know anything about aircraft. Reasonably plausible because they've got a couple of captains, they've got a couple of engineers, you know, they've got a few people on the books there that are making these arguments. Okay, so there is a bit of credibility to it, and some of the little aspects that they stick to, like the normal flying operating speed of the aircraft, is much slower than what we saw on 9/11. Now, I haven't done the analysis of the airspeeds, but I do believe that they're approximately 500 miles per hour. But all I'm telling you is that is 100% possible, and it's very unlikely that they could be controlled easily by pilots, so I concede on that point as well. But it's very simple for the autopilot to control the aircraft even at that speed, or another program through remote control. It still could be controlled at that speed, but very difficult for a pilot to control. So, you know, because of all the implausibilities of what happened on 9/11, it puts a bit of weight behind the case. But the thing that they don't have is they don't have any precedents, historical precedents. They don't have any testing that they've done. They don't have any hard evidence about holograms. And we've got the contrary. You know, we've got 50-plus videos, individual videos from all sorts of people showing the planes. We've got, you know, empirical evidence that we can use to show other aircraft crashing at high speed will completely disintegrate. You know, so their arguments are based on, they're just pushing this idea that it looks strange. Geez, that looks strange. How could that be? It just looks strange.
Look, apparently,
yeah, they don't actually base it any evidence, and then they use conjecture and they use expert paid witnesses or witnesses that are manipulated or witnesses that say, "I never heard a noise." Now the Doppler effect says that, you know, the plane,
you're not going to hear it in front.
The high moving object, you don't hear the noise until it's gone past, right?
Absolutely.
Now, anyone that's got anything to do with like racing or aircraft or been in those vaults understand the Doppler effect. Now, some people don't. Now, you get some lady in the street, and he's talking to this lady that saw the plane fly in, just has rung her up, "Oh, look, I'm just doing an investigative journalist piece," or whatever BS he tells them. And then he says, "So did you hear a noise?" Now, he must have rung every witness he could find. And she said, no, it was very quiet. And then she said, "Well, so did you hear a noise of the plane?" "No, I didn't." But then she goes on to say, "Well, I wasn't really, you know, I was so shocked and all the rest of it, but I didn't hear a noise as it hit." Now, that makes complete sense to me, because there would be no noise if you were standing directly below that building when the plane hit. It would take, you know, a few seconds before you heard the noise.
And they're really using that. They're trying to use such a childish
argument. Any little thing they can get, and they just focus on that and keep hammering on that one little point to build another little, you know, a bit of evidence into their, you know, story that they're creating. But all of it is as weak as the last, you know, manipulation or the last exaggeration or the last, opinion that they've used. You know, it's like it's completely baseless. The whole argument is flawed, but it seems to make this argument along the way, just like the official story of 9/11 did, I suppose, where it's a little bit believable.
And so, what do you think? I mean, your analysis has, you know, completely, you know, you've destroyed the film, and you've done it well. Question is, what do you think is our best approach with this? I mean, you know, we don't want to totally ignore it. We're obviously not going to link to it. I mean, you haven't linked to it. You've given the title to the film, I noticed, but you didn't link to it. I think that's appropriate. You know, we don't really want give
You'll
traffic.
Find it. It's all over the net and it's free everywhere, and you can download it in high definition if you want for free.
Really?
How amazing is that?
Really.
Pump it out to the site. Pump it out, baby. Let's pump out this truth. You know, like it's so immature in a way, and maybe that's who they're aiming for, the young, immature people that are disillusioned. Maybe that's their audience. And,
well, see, I see this as part of a twin-pronged attack. Now, the other prong was what we were talking about before with the hit pieces on the 9/11 truth movement that basically reinforce in your mind that these people are complete wackos. That's one prong. The other prong is investing money and promoting films and books and whatever that promote the wacky theories. And those two come together, and they're trying to create a sea of disinformation. They're trying to make it come at you from all different places, right?
Mm.
And now after the break, we're going to talk about Wikipedia, because that's another prong of the attack.
Could I just bring up one little thing before we go to the break?
Indeed.
At the end of this film, there's twice that they've used, in the mainstream media, they've used the no plane idea at the World Trade Center to discredit us in a couple of like I think it once in a film and once in a sitcom, where they've had some dope-smoking freak that said, ah, man, there was no planes at the World Trade Center, you know, it was an inside job, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They use that, and then they say, oh, look, they're picking on our theory because it's right.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Now, that's slick. Now, and they did some real slick things like that that really worried me. As you saw from my post at 9/11 Oz, this is really bad, this film, in a really destructive way if people fall for it.
Well, look, what I'd like to encourage anyone who's listening to this show tonight is take this, get indignant. Like, this should make you indignant. And all the decent, you know, respectable, mature, intelligent people out there that you know, you need to speak to them and communicate and really take this to another level. Because if all the decent, respectable people that we have in this country all took some action, we could end this. I really do believe that. If even one-tenth of those people did something, we could end this. At the moment, it's like about 1 in 10,000. You know, it's way too small. I mean, a larger number of people are sympathetic, but they don't do anything. They don't take any action. And then they say to themselves, oh, there's no point because they can't see. It's like they look for evidence that there's some action being taken. And because they don't see it, they say, well, I won't do anything. And that then leaves it to the tiny, tiny minority of people who actually are doing something, and then they look like they're very isolated, and then we then get paired up with people like Jim Fetzer and these other ones who appear to be deliberately causing trouble, and because we're such a small group in ourselves, it then becomes confusing for a newcomer. They see us, they see the no-planers, you know, they see a few websites here and there. They don't know what the, you know, orthodoxy or the truth of 9/11 truth is, you know. So the only way to break through that, the only way we are going to make headway through that is if we get a vast wave, a real grassroots wave of indignant people. I'm talking about school teachers, taxi drivers, academics, workers, metal workers, unionists. They've all got to stand up and start saying stuff. Would you agree with that?
I would, and you know, you get support from all those sorts of people in private. But they're not speaking out. A lot of people now are prepared to back someone in a public situation that brings up these issues, and I've seen that numerous times now. But there's not many prepared to speak up on their own. Obviously, you know, we're moving through a stage now where they've taken the gloves off. The disinformation is going to become more professional, I think, at this stage because of the paper that Stephen Jones, Frank Legg et al. Have brought out recently about the, you know, thermetic material.
Indeed.
Is in the dust, which we can touch on a bit later.
I'm going to play the interview with Niels Harrit after the break as well. So, and then we'll discuss that a bit more. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, great. So we'll just take a short break and some music, and we will be back. You are listening to How Low by Jose Gonzalez.
How low were you willing to go before you reach all your selfish goals? Punchline after punchline, leaving us sore, absorbed in your hustling, feeding our monster, just feeding our monster.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. We are back. Truth News Radio Australia is beaming out to you from our headquarters here, deep in the heart of Sydney. And I'm joined on the line by Josh Jackson. Josh, welcome back to the show.
G'day, Harold. How are you, mate?
I am extremely well. Unfortunately, however, John Bursell, we've lost due to audio problems. And we, I do apologize to the audience because we were about to get into the second half of the show with John. And we've got major problems actually with the software that we're using.
And, frustrating.
Very frustrating. We get this intermittent problem. We get snap, crackle and pop and everything goes crazy. And it's very hard for us to identify the problem when it's happening as well. So we're actually shifting to some new software next week. We've been using GarageBand for up till now, and you know, I mean, it's served us well, but it's a terrible piece of software, folks. You know, it's free.
It's very Mickey Mouse, you know.
Yeah, it's free, so you can't complain, can you?
No, and see, the problem is, folks, that that Harold and John have recorded the whole show now, and Harold's gone back and realized the crackling started, you know, from 2 minutes ago.
Indeed.
And we're actually recording over that bit now.
We are.
And John has left the building.
He has, yeah. So what I'll do is I'll just, you know, we'll pick up from where we left off at the end of the last segment. And we were just about to get into, I was going to give a quick recap on the fallout from the major scientific breakthrough published in a peer-reviewed journal. Demonstrating evidence of thermite in the World Trade Center dust. And Josh, you may be aware that really this has gone viral on the internet now, and a lot of people are talking about it. And I think for that same reason, those who wish to silence us are also taking much more extreme action now.
Well, it's not only that, Harold. You know, I'm finding like people are so... They're so block-minded. They try to block everything out. Like, for instance, I put it on my Facebook account, and instantly okay. I got this person saying, oh, yeah, but they found that dust, like, heaps far away from the actual scene.
Really?
And it's like, oh, man, I just sighed and just went, oh, like, I just can't even be bothered responding to that. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, who are these people? I mean, there's a YouTube video that I've posted, which is from a Danish interview on Danish television, and you'll find it on the 9/11 Oz YouTube channel. That's been inundated with comments, and at the moment there are two or three, you know, debunker types, you know, JREF forum types on there. They came onto the thread swearing and insulting, you know, absolute obscenities, calling everyone morons and, you know, using, you know, quite foul language.
Oh yeah! Instead of actually, you know, constructively attacking the evidence with other opposing empirical evidence, you know, they'll just come on and attack people and use childish sort of tactics.
And then every now and then, like occasionally, amidst this tirade of just obscene abuse, they'll say something like, "Oh, Bentham isn't a respectable journal," you know, and you know, we're supposed to then take them seriously. I mean, these people can't argue. Then they say something like that. Then they go back to being obscene again.
Yeah, because Popular Mechanics is, you know,
so respectable.
So respectable, yeah. You know.
Yeah, and they so debunked the truth movement, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, yeah. And Bill O'Reilly, totally respectable.
Oh, look, that man, you know, he's just the absolute ramrod, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, king of journalism.
Yeah,
hard hitting stuff.
Very, very stalwart.
Very investigative. Anyway, yeah.
So yes.
I guess the next level of what we're talking about here is this whole wiki.
Yeah, yeah. The great wiki censorship of 2009 is what they're calling it. I mean, This is a crackdown. This is a Wikipedia crackdown, which is, you know, really of a caliber that it invokes your worst nightmare of the future. But it's only Wikipedia, okay? And Wikipedia is just a website. So what if it's got a million members and, you know, millions of articles? It's just a website, okay? What's actually happening now for people who are thinking people, like you and me, is Wikipedia is rapidly losing what credibility it still had, you know? And it had some for me. I still thought it was okay. I knew there was shenanigans that went on there. But what's going on there now is just ridiculous, okay? They are, what they've done, let me just explain and articulate it very clearly. They are removing every link, every time an editor puts a link to the thermitic, the evidence for thermitic residue in the World Trade Center dust, the article, which we've been talking about here on the show. Every time someone posts a link to that article, the Wikipedia admins come along and delete it.
And now, that's even on the wiki entries to do with 9/11 conspiracy theories.
Yes, they even removed it from Stephen Jones' Wikipedia article. And Stephen Jones is one of the authors of the paper. Now,
yeah. Look, Herod, this draws very, very close parallels to the system that we live in as a whole. Because we all, you know, Wikipedia is this amazing democratic entry point. But at the end of the day, it's still highly censored by a few elite editors. And this is the same with our mainstream media. You know, it's a lot of the mainstream is collated from you and me and everyone who, you know, moves stuff around and information here and there, and especially on the internet nowadays. And but it's still censored by a few at the top. So there's nothing really that different between, you know, Wiki. The best way, folks, for true information freedom is diversity. Diversity, yes, of websites. And that's why it's very important not to only stick videos on YouTube, or not to only stick wiki entries in, or not to only trust MySpace. You know, really move your information around everywhere and use the internet as what it was designed for, a very fractured but centralized but fractured system where you could constantly link to thousands of different articles into one page.
Yes.
But they can be hosted very, very fractionally all over the web. So it's decentralized, uncontrollable, and anarchic information. And that's the way it's got to stay. And that's very, very important for the future of truth.
And within that, though, within that anarchic world that you've described there, what can still happen is that when a quality group comes together, or someone presents quality information consistently, that will be recognized, and there will be a natural tendency for that which has value to become popular. But that's based on the choice of individuals, not based by monolithic, monopolized constructs. But you know, we have to emphasize, you know, I mean, I know that there's a difference between quality and not so good quality. And, you know, I'm aiming for quality. We're working for quality. Josh and I here are working for quality. We know we can do better. What I would like to see is that approach, you know, liberal, you know, that liberal approach everywhere. And for the organizations that have consolidated all this power, that they apply those standards back to themselves. And they're not. Wikipedia is not doing that anymore. Wikipedia is now playing the role of an authoritarian system.
Yeah.
There's no quality in that anymore. It becomes dumbed down. It becomes stupidville.
Well, I mean, you were telling me that they've got an actual policy stating that anything to do with September 11 will be highly scrutinized and most likely be deleted.
Indeed. Well, we were discussing. I was discussing this with John in the section that got scrubbed, and I'll just reiterate what we went through. What they've said is that an article such as this hypothesis about the World Trade Center collapse is not a hypothesis, it's a conspiracy theory. And the reason they say it's a conspiracy theory is because the article itself has been posted on sites like InfoWars and other, you know, conspiracy sites. Therefore,
ooh,
this information...
it's been linked. Hey, oh, God, it's been linked?
Yeah.
Really?
Therefore, this information is not a hypothesis. It's a conspiracy theory.
That's so ridiculous.
And they've actually argued that the title of the article that was originally titled Hypothesis About World Trade Center Collapse has to be renamed to Conspiracy Theory About. Now, this again dovetails with...
Very Orwellian. It's extraordinarily Orwellian.
Because they've established the phrase, they've established a meme. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that term. It's a psychological term. They've established a meme. The word conspiracy theory triggers an automatic response now in people's brains because it triggers a response because it's been programmed into you to understand that as meaning something that has a whole lot of qualities. A, it's totally unreliable. B, it's put forward by people who are mentally unstable. It's silly.
Yep. D, it's entertainment.
Yeah, it's amusing. As we saw in the article from Wired, they called it alternately poignant and amusing. You know, and then they talked about information rat holes on the internet.
Oh, yeah, like if you look into September 11th, you're actually diving into
a
internet
rat hole.
Rat holes of the internet. I mean, the language that these people use, it's so kindergarten. Instead of actually looking and citing specific arguments and then trying to, take those arguments on with proper science, instead they'll just go into sort of this sort of schoolyard bully mentality where you just start poking fun at things or calling things rat holes and
yes.
It's all very childish. And, you know, if to me, this really shows that, there's something to be looked at here. There's truth to it, to a lot of these theories. Whenever I see arguments where people start resorting to that sort of childish name calling, I all of a sudden I think, hang on, what? There must be some truth here somewhere because, you know, they can't argue it properly.
And I agree. And I also think it puts the nail in the coffin for Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I
mean, Wikipedia's battled ever since day one, and I've stood up for Wikipedia, you know, along the way.
I've stood up for it. I mean, I've stood up against accusations that you should never quote from Wikipedia because it's totally unreliable. Well, I've disputed that because I think, well, no, it's a source of information, just like news.com.au is, just like the ABC or the BBC. It's a source of information, okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's got bad information. But you don't say, oh, I'll never use that. No, we use all sources.
Well, yeah, or like, you know, the Great Wall of China was built by the Emperor Zaki Mura, you know, when that's really a quote from a Telstra ad. So,
is that correct, you know, is it? Is that?
Yeah. So I remember going on there and someone had edited it to that. You know, it took them a while to realize, okay. You know.
Yeah. And I do actually think the underlying concept of Wikipedia is excellent, massively democratic. But
it could be better. It could be.
Yeah.
Better in terms of decentralizing it.
Well,
I mean, wikis are not Wikipedia, folks. Wikis are the concept of group, using a whole lot of people to enter data from different viewpoints and group, interaction. It is not Wikipedia. Wikipedia just used the technology of wikis to make a website called Wikipedia. So you can get wiki software, PHP software and stick it on your web server and start your own wiki.
Indeed, indeed. You can create your own Wikipedia in minutes.
Yeah.
And that's what people should be doing.
Absolutely.
There should be a million Wikipedias. Although, I mean, okay, I think there's some benefit in you know, the size of the Wikipedia has of information that you can get an article on almost any subject. I do like that. But where it's gone wrong, to me, it seems, is that they've got this admin hierarchy.
Yeah, well, I can get an article about anything, information on the web as well, Harold. You know, I don't need Wikipedia, the website. I can find articles on, you know, the health benefits of eating raw food.
And look, I think realistically that's what we're going to do now. I mean, I've just about had enough of it. You know, I'm tired of going to Wikipedia, seeing what's going on now. As much as it's been convenient and nice to go to Wikipedia to get concise articles on a particular subject, like let's say you're talking about a person, let's say when you're writing an article and you've referenced an individual in that article and you want the reader to just know something about it, I usually go to Wikipedia and grab a chunk of text and stick it in there. It's easy, you know, because I'm lazy, right?
Yeah, well, that's what it comes down to, folks.
Yeah,
it comes back down to laziness. Look, information, truth is not truth because you've seen it in one place. Truth is truth because you've researched, you've cross-referenced many different angles.
And that's what we've got to start doing more.
Absolutely. And if you're very, very passionate about a subject or a subject is very important, you cannot rely on one source. You cannot. I mean, it's unscientific in the first place. And B, it's just...
And what you see inevitably happening, as any source of information gets bigger and bigger, which means it's got a big infrastructure behind it, which means it's got power and money behind it, of course there are going to be interests, okay? There are always going to be interests of those who run it to promote certain information and suppress other information.
Look,
it's intrinsic.
You know, I'm not sure if you can actually track who sponsors Wikipedia. Every so often they have these sponsorship drives. I mean, I've even sponsored them years and years ago. I gave them $10 or something from you know, PayPal or something.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, who is to say that, you know, I mean, these people, it's a private business and they need money for servers and all the rest. I mean, the bandwidth must be astronomical. So for, you know, I mean, what if someone comes along and says, hey, I'll give you $1 million, but, you know, don't talk about these things. It's theoretical. I'm not stating that's the case.
Yeah.
But that, what I'm saying is that when you get a massive centralized hub of information or centralized hub of anything,
it becomes Stalinist.
It becomes corruptible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, interesting analogy. A few days ago, I think it was on the Alex Jones show, I heard that Alternet, a big mainstream progressive site, very popular, is actually subsidized by George Soros and the Carnegie Foundation, or there's certain very powerful philanthropic, you know, so-called groups behind Alternet, okay? Now, Alternet is one of those sites. Are you familiar with it, Josh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've
yeah, I mean, it's know, a...
gone
it's
down
a,
that rat hole.
For yeah, yeah. Yeah, here's where we get our revenge. Yeah, we can call it a rat hole. Because, well, the thing is, like, okay, it's not a bad site. I've read a few good articles there.
I'm just kidding.
They do stand up for some of the progressive values that I believe in. But they've also written really nasty attack articles, hit pieces on the 9/11 truth movement. And again, I think Wikipedia is getting its funding from the same type of people that looks progressive. It's got a superficial veneer of, yes, we support democracy, you know, we support the values of freedom, blah, blah, blah. But there'll be certain things that they totally apply censorship to, but they do it in a very backhanded, very, actually really nasty way, because they don't admit that they're doing it. They just use all this ridiculous language and all these twisted Orwellian you know, double think concepts to basically say black is white and 2 + 2 = 5, if, you know, and it's really nastier than just, for example, say the propaganda of North Korea or someplace like that, which, you know, it doesn't have that sophisticated twistedness to it. I find it particularly offensive. It really, really gets right up my nose, I have to say.
I'm just having a look at it now. They've got a headline: sea levels are rising. It's time to decide which coastal cities are worth saving.
Is that an alternate?
Ice Cube. Yeah. Big picture of this city underwater. And it says ice cubes the size of American states are melting into the ocean.
There is no evidence that sea levels have been rising for about 10,000 years, okay? Ever since the glaciers started melting, which covered half the earth, right? Sea levels have been slowly rising. And that rate of increase is about 1 centimeter a year or something. No, less. It's 1 centimeter a century. It's okay? You can't even measure it at the moment, okay? I mean, in the time frame that we've got of, say, looking at the last 30 years, you can't measure it.
Yeah.
There's no evidence for it at all. They're making it up, ladies and gentlemen, okay? It's outright fraud.
But don't believe us. Just go do your research. Just go research it. Don't believe one source. I mean, we're saying no. They're saying yeah.
Hmm.
Go and research it, folks.
I strongly recommend.
It only takes a little bit of time to realize that the science doesn't add up. The science is absolutely pathetic.
I strongly recommend an Australian website called Climate Skeptics. I think it's climateskeptics.org.au, but don't quote me on that. Google Climate Skeptics and look for pages from Australia. It's an excellent site. They've got massive links to all of the best skeptical material on global warming, and it's actually a political party as well. Well, they're trying to make it into one. They are...
yeah, it's climateskeptics.com.au.
Okay, there you go, climateskeptics.com.au. Thanks, Josh. It's got some great material on there. And they're trying to provide a political platform to oppose the emissions trading scheme. So God bless them, that's all I can say.
Yeah, well, you know, I love the quote they've got there from I'm not sure who the quote, I think it's Thomas Huxley, but it says, "Skepticism is the highest of duties and blind faith the one unparitable sin."
That is extremely, extremely true. And, you know, I mean, okay, we were talking about Wikipedia. And the point here, just to basically finish off on that, the point here is what they're doing is they are undermining, as I see it, they are undermining the very principle on which Wikipedia was created. They're using doublethink.
Mm.
Apparently, editors who post articles on there are being censored for doing it. And then if they continue to object, for example, if they publish a comment in the discussion section objecting to what the admins have done, they get banned. And then their comments get deleted. So the discussion...
Oh, God, you're serious. They get banned.
They get banned and the discussion gets choked. And the discussion is normally a free area. Like the Wikipedia discussion area is supposed to be a place where you can just discuss what's going on articles, okay? So it's not part of the article. It's totally separate from it. Now, people have tried to put forward the argument that it's inappropriate to be deleting links to an article from a page by the man who wrote the article, you know, and these comments are being, the person's being banned and they're being deleted.
Well, look, I put it out there that everybody should post the link back onto that page. I mean, it's, maybe that's the way to go. I don't know.
Well, from what I've read, and there's a big thread on this at truthaction.org, which is a forum dedicated to the 9/11 truth movement. And what they're saying is that it's being patrolled constantly And within minutes, every time someone puts the article up, within a few minutes, it's gone again. So this is coordinated. There's a lot of people involved. It's a serious info war going on at the moment. It's one they're going to lose, by the way.
Yeah, well, folks, keep posting it.
Keep posting and...
And stuff them. Post it everywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
The deepest corners of the internet need this. And not only the internet, folks. The deepest corners of your local community need this. You know, go and put this DVD, put the DVD of Richard Cage's Gage's you know, blueprint for truth.
Yes.
Go burn that and give it to your local library. You know, or go not don't burn it. Go and buy a copy. Go support these people because they need it. You know, they've you know, given up their jobs to do this full time. So go and buy their DVD. And you know, I was thinking about this the other day, Harold. My local library's got, you know, a whole DVD section, and they're always looking for people to submit DVDs to them. So go and bring any 9/11 Truth DVDs to them and say, here you go, I'm donating these to the library. You know, you've seen them, folks, so go and give them away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get them out into the real world. Get them in libraries. That's an excellent move. And I would say also, if you're any good at editing video, create your own YouTube channel if you don't already have one, and re-upload the same video to a new channel. I've done that with a couple of videos, and they've gone crazy. I re-uploaded the one from the Danish television, which featured Niels Hurrit, who's one of the authors of the paper. It's got about 3,000 views in a few days. That's the way we need to work. You need to keep re-uploading the same things.
I totally agree. And one thing to push that point even further is there's a great site called Tube Mogul.
Okay.
That's TubeMogul, tubemogul.com. Now, basically what they do, you can upload your video to them and they upload it to Revver, Vidler, YouTube, MySpace, a heap of video sharing sites, Yahoo.
Excellent.
And basically give you analytics back, you know, Metacafe, Vimeo, all of them. So and you get these fantastic analytics back about your video. So not only do you only have to upload your video once, but it uploads them to all those different sites.
What can you recommend, Josh, as an alternative to YouTube? Because there's evidence that YouTube may be going the way of Wikipedia. You know, there's more and more cases of censorship.
I've seen it. I've taken screen grabs of it, especially during the Ron Paul campaign.
Okay.
You know, basically there was, I mean, this is unbelievable. There was like thousands of comments on this video. Yet the video had only been viewed 200 times.
Okay, yeah, they dropped the view count down. That's what they've done on Google Video as well with Loose Change. And
I remember grabbing the screen grab and posting it all over, you know, all over the place back in the day. I don't know if I can find it now, but you know, I mean, it has happened. I'm sure you can find proof of it if you just go looking. It's amazing.
And of course, you know, by dropping the view count, they ensure that video won't make it into the most popular sections of the featured site.
I think, you know, the other sites to geez, you know, I mean, there's heaps of them. You can go, there's Blip TV, Break, Bright Cove, Crackle, Daily Motion, Ebaum's World, Grasper, Grind TV, you know, it goes on and on. MySpace, Revver, Yahoo Video, VO.
Okay.
It goes on and on, folks. It's really imperative that we don't just use YouTube. It's really, really important. And you know, the other thing
I think we're going to promote that. Feet. You know what? I think we're going to promote that more and more on the show. You know, as a response now to seeing what's happening, I think I'm going to start vigorously encouraging and promoting alternate media options for everyone.
It's absolutely important. Yeah. And I would even go as far as to start not using Google as much.
Indeed. What can you recommend as an alternative to Google?
Well, I'll have to get back to you on that because, you know, I don't want to just say any old...
Have you heard of Scroogle?
No.
Yeah. there's a site called Scroogle. I'm not quite sure whether it's any good. there's something called Dogpile.
Yeah, oh, that's an oldie, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But, yeah, I think...
there's the old Alta Vista.
Yeah, well, Alta Vista is one of the oldest.
Yeah.
Mm, I mean, they were around before Google.
Indeed.
So, you know, it's important to support alternative things. I generally, I mean, this is just me, I generally try in day-to-day life, if something's getting too big, like all of a sudden, you know, Coles and all these massive big things in real life, you know, big shopping centers, if they're getting too big for their boots, I purposely go for the little guys a little bit more. You know, I try to support the little guys. And that not only helps support, you know, new people, but what it also does is it promotes entrepreneurship and new things. You know, people have to try and come up with new ideas and better ways of dealing with it. And then so do the big ones. They come up with trying to get you back, you know. So it's a great way to keep people on the ball.
I totally agree. Look, I think we're getting to the end of the show tonight. Unless there's anything you'd like to wrap up with. Any thoughts on your mind there?
Well, folks, I'd like you to keep a lookout on some of these bird flus that, you know, apparently these vaccines for bird flu have actually got bird flu in them.
Yeah.
And you know, this is very scary to me because, you know, vaccines, that's how vaccines work. You put little tiny bits of whatever it is you're trying to, you know, vaccinate against and that works. But if you suddenly start injecting thousands of people with bird flu and some people have a cold and it mutates,
yeah,
you know, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. And if they do, if I want to go on the more cynical side and the sinister side of things, they do know what they're doing and they're trying to make it bust out. I mean, I don't think that's true because I think they could just easily manufacture one in the lab, one that's...
I tend to agree with you. But, you know, there's been a lot of disease epidemics caused by vaccines, and we're going to be getting back onto that topic again. It's one that we covered last year, but we're going to return to it repeatedly. I tend to steer away from the extreme... I guess conspiracy theories, you might say, that, you know, it's a deliberate attempt to poison us. I think that we've got enough evidence to show that, A, that vaccines are very problematic, B, that there's, you know, definite things in them that could hurt you, C, that...
What, really? So you're saying
indeed
that mercury actually hurts you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And as we heard last year when we had Meryl Dorey on the show from the Vaccine Network.
We've got to get her back on the show.
Yeah, we'll definitely be getting back on that topic. But you look, the flu thing, look, there's been a bit of disinfo on the internet with people calling in talking about trains and coffins and things like that. It's been debunked now properly, I think, by Alex Jones, and good on him for that. And you know, what we emphasize is, yes, there are problems. There are known issues where, you know, there was that case in Poland where a whole lot of children died after being given the vaccine. There are all these cases of autism linked to vaccination. There are thousands of cases here in Australia of severe reactions from the vaccine for... cervical cancer. You know, we've got all this solid documented stuff. We don't need to get into the more speculative area. We just don't need to. Like, we just stick with this wealth of this mountain of information we've got.
Oh, honestly, the amount of information is trying to trifle through it all.
Yeah.
Is like trying to, you know, really, you know, get the Titanic while it's sinking and you've got a thimble in your hand and
trying to bail it out.
Bail the water out. You know, it's insane. It's the amount of information we have got, which is totally credible, without trying to theorize about.
Yeah, I mean, the question is it just a medical blunder or is it some deliberate thing? Yeah. You know, we don't know. We'll just present you the information that should be enough to create a grassroots, overwhelming, you know, movement to say, let's just.
Of total outrage. Yeah. You should be ringing all your representatives saying, what the hell are these pharmaceuticals doing, putting bird flu in vaccines and injecting people with it?
Yeah, and if there's all this evidence that vaccines are causing problems, for one thing, if people want to have a vaccine, if they choose to have a vaccine, fine. They should have the right to have it, right? But to have it so that your child can't go to childcare unless he's vaccinated, your child can't go to school unless he or she is vaccinated, and then to virtually mandate, as we've seen here, that a child could be taken away from its parents because the parents didn't want to vaccinate, that's where we should really be having outrage.
Oh, absolutely. That is one of the most scariest scenarios I can see. You know, where the state starts enforcing medical...
Yeah. And seriously, mucking around with bird flu, putting bird flu into a vaccine, giving it to people, it's totally irresponsible. Totally, totally ridiculous and irresponsible. And they need to be stopped. These are out of control pharmaceutical organizations making money out of this and then trying to make it policy that, like, your six-year-old has to have a flu vaccination. Children don't need flu vaccinations. It's absurd. You know, like, people who are maybe in their 80s, if the vaccines worked, which I still dispute, but if they did work, people who are old and frail or have, you know, got serious problems, maybe. A child does not need to be protected from the flu. The flu is an okay thing to get, okay? And this bird flu that they talk about, the epidemic of bird flu, is totally speculative because it's never happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's jumped from fowl to human, but it's never jumped human to human.
Well, I mean, I tend to think it has once.
I think it has once in the wild, and then it died.
I mean, I tend to think the whole thing is fabricated for the purpose of creating something to be afraid of that they can market the solution for. Again, problem, reaction, solution that we've seen with other things.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, why would some pharmaceutical try to do this? I mean, that's more of a reason, I think. Massive, massive profits. If this suddenly, mutated, I mean, the amount of vaccine that would be forced upon us would be absolutely obscene. And, you know, they'd probably do something ridiculous where they would get a vaccine that actually worked so that, you know, next time you took every vaccine that's owned, you know.
If they force mass consumption of the vaccine, they can create a scenario like was done with polio in the 50s, where they forced everyone to get the polio vaccine. And guess what happened? There was a polio epidemic in the 1950s. That's after polio had almost disappeared. That's a fact.
Really? So.
Oh yeah, I've done my research on this one. One of the last polio epidemics occurred. After it was called the Salk vaccine. You can Google this, you can research it, and it's even admitted. But what they say is, oh, well, you know, we make mistakes, we learn. That's how they justify it. Yes, the Salk vaccine had some problems. Oops.
Or you can use an alternate search engine to search that.
Yes, yes. Alta Vista it.
Damn the common vernacular. All right, well.
Look, okay, well, I think,
plenty of food to digest there, folks.
Absolutely. And just try not to digest too many vaccines.
And I'd like to thank John Bursell for coming in. I'm sorry that that his audio didn't work out at the second half of the show there.
We'll try and get him back again as soon as possible.
Oh, he's a fantastic talker, and it's just so great to have him. The 9/11 Truth Movement really is blessed to have John on board there. He's a top man.
Agree totally. Thank you so much, Josh, for stepping into the breach. And we will be back next week, guaranteed.
Cheers.
Good night and good luck.